It's Saturday, the 9th of January, 2016. Happy birthday to Terence Jones. To the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Mr. Bonafide. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to sponsor the podcast like Mr. Bonafide, it's easy. You know what to do by now. Just leave a review on iTunes. Also, a big shout out to the guys at Moneyball.com.au, Australia's best daily fantasy sports site. Get on Moneyball if you are in Australia or if you are in New Zealand. It's the best option for us out here. It's fantastic. They're great at their payouts. Contests are fantastic. Lots of great guys on there as well. So make sure you're checking that out. As I mentioned, my name is Josh Lloyd. And before we get into all the stuff for today, a couple of things. Well, actually, one thing I really want to mention. Apologies for yesterday's show. There was some background noise coming through. I didn't realize it was coming through so audibly. So I do apologize for that. Obviously, won't happen again. So I do apologize for that. And thanks for everyone who's mentioned to me. Yesterday, there was the FSWA Awards nominees were tweeted out, and people tweeting at me and tweeting at FSWA that my podcast should have been included in the Best Podcast Awards, and I do really appreciate that. There's probably a couple of things holding it back, and that's that the other podcasts are really good and better than mine. But the other thing is I'm not a member of the FSWA. I probably should get around to becoming a member there, then maybe the podcast and get nominated. But your support and congratulatory tweets, what's the right word? Your tweet saying that you thought my podcast should have been in there was very nice to hear. So thank you for everyone did that. And big shout out to all the basketball guys who were nominated for awards, especially Ryan Nouse from RotoWorld, who's a really good guy, really nice guy to chat with. And his work is always fantastic. So big shout out to Ryan for getting nominated for Basketball Writer of the Year from the FSWA Fantasy Awards. Okay. Let's do it.
Let's get to it.
Thank you, Michael. Now, you listen to this podcast, you might be watching live, you can see the title of the show, and you probably think, what's wrong with this guy? What does this title mean? I tweeted out a link before. I do encourage you to go and check it, and that will give you all the explanation you need for this title. If you haven't seen the link, just go on YouTube and just type in Damo and Darren 1, and that'll give you it's the first line of the video on there, and that is exactly where I got it from. I don't want to repeat the full first line, and I couldn't put the whole full first line in the title of the podcast. Probably wouldn't have got through the YouTube censors or your iTunes censors or anything like that, and it's a little bit offensive, but go and have a look at Damo and Darren. Check out what I tweeted out, and that will give you an idea why I named this podcast Oi Damo, Give Us Your Lighter. And I'm referring to Damian Lillard, and he was the monstrous line of the night. If you didn't get that through all that crap that I was just talking, Lillard played 38 minutes. He scored 40 points. He had 6 triples, 3 rebounds, 10 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, and was great from the line as well, going 10 of 12 and pretty solid from the field. He had 12 of 27 there, which is, it doesn't seem great, but 44% from Damian Lillard, you'll take it. The thing that's odd to me is this game was a blowout. Damian Lillard's dealing with plantar fasciitis. The rest of the players, had limited minutes spread out. Why play your best players, Lillard 38 minutes and CJ McCollum 36 minutes, especially when Lillard's dealing with a foot issue that requires rest to get better? Why play him 38 minutes? I know we love it from a fantasy point of view for our seasonal leagues, for our DFS lineups. It doesn't make a huge amount of sense to me, but Lillard was still great. That's huge stats there. He's been, I think it's fair to say, a little bit disappointing with his overall value this year. A lot of people were taking him at the end of the first round. He's currently ranked 17th in 8 category leagues, which is not too far off, so you're not going to be that down on him. He's increased his scoring, he's increased his threes, he's marginally increased his assists, but what he's doing is he's really, really hurting your field goal percentage, and that was a reason why I wanted to avoid him in rotisserie leagues, because he's at 41% on 20 attempts, and it's not impossible to win with that, but you do have to build around it. So he was someone who I did drop down in roto leagues and didn't want to take him at that spot in the draft. In head-to-head leagues, I'd look at him and build a team as a punt field goal percentage guy. Over the last 2 months, he's shooting less than 40%, so his shooting's getting worse as the season progresses, and that's where it's starting to become a concern. He's three games back from injury, 35%. It will get better from there, and today we saw it better as well, but that was always the big concern for me coming into the season for Lillard, was that his field goal percentage was going to take a hit after having a 42.5% over his first couple of seasons. It did drop down, and that was sort of to be expected. But otherwise, everything else you're getting from him, you're pretty happy, and you're very happy that he's keeping it at one steal a game, because that's also a criticism of his game. You'd like him to give you 1.5, but you know, the first 2 years of his career, he was sub 1 in his steal. So at least he's gotten that up the last 2 seasons, and that really helps add to his fantasy value. The waiver wire line of the night, I went with Brandon Rush of the Golden State Warriors. I know Lou Williams had a huge night, but he is owned in 66% of leagues, and I like to look at guys under 60% owned for the waiver wire line of the night. We'll talk about Lou Williams later on, but Brandon Rush is not owned in 60% of leagues. He played 29 minutes, had 20 points, including 4 threes, 4 rebounds. He added a steal and a block, and also went 8 of 9 from the field. Brandon Rush's minutes are going to drop. Harrison Barnes is still working his way back in. He played 23 in this one. His minutes are going to increase. Leandro Barbosa is going to be back soon, and that's going to impact Rush. So don't go and get too excited about Brandon Rush. If you look at his rankings on Basketball Monster for the last week, he's ranked 46th. That's pretty high, but it's going to drop. He's not going to shoot 63%. He's not going to hit 2.7 threes a game. But this is big from a guy who last year couldn't do anything. He was terrible. He averaged 0.9 points a game last year. That's almost unfathomable. He shot 20% from the field. He's at 45% this year. He's been a real key figure for the Warriors with their injuries when Clay was out, with Harrison Barnes was out. He hasn't been fantastic, but he's been decent and enough where deeper leagues would want to look at him. Whereas last year, even if you're in a team, I swear, with 30 teams, you wouldn't have wanted to own Brandon Rush. But for now, you can look at him in 16-team leagues, 18-team leagues perhaps. That might come back a bit when Barnes is back to getting his 30 minutes. But for now, he's providing a pretty key role for this team, and it's good to see him bounce back and just adds to the Warriors' huge depth they've got, I guess. The young gun of the night. I've mentioned this guy plenty of times this year in the Nightly Awards. Unfortunately, it's been in the dud of the night category, but today I'm going with Andrew Wiggins as the young gun of the night. He played 39 minutes and had a career-high 35 points. But what I really liked is he added 3 triples, he had a steal, he had a block, and he actually went 12 of 19 from the field. He still struggled with his free throws, 8 of 12, and that's been a concern from him all year. But when he starts adding threes, adding steals and blocks, the rebounds and assists were still poor, 2 rebounds and 3 assists. But everything else was good, and that's what's really holding him back from his fantasy value. I've talked about him a lot. He's averaging 20 points a game, and he's outside the top 120 because he gives you no threes, no rebounds, no assists, no steals, no blocks, bad percentages, like just bad in all areas. He's a negative in every single category except for scoring. And that's not ideal, especially when people were looking at him and going hard after him. And I don't really remember where he was drafted, probably around the 60s, maybe the 70s. I don't know. And it was way too high. But today, he started doing a bit of everything, played against Cleveland, the team that drafted him, put up some really nice numbers. And let's hope that that's something that he's going to start developing in the future. He'll hit some more threes. He'll get some more of those defensive numbers. And over his last 4 games, he's averaging 1.3 steals, one block, and 0.8 threes. And if he can approach a triple one guy with 20 points and get those, and especially that free throw percentage, get that back up to 75, 78%, then we're talking top 100 guy. But for now, he's just not in that category. Dart of the night goes to Hassan Whiteside, who was, I think it's fair to say, not good. 19 minutes for Whiteside, 5 points, 9 rebounds, no blocks, 2 of 8 from the field, 1 of 2 from the line. And the thing about Whiteside is that when he plays, he's bad. Like, he's really bad for the Heat's defense. And don't confuse block numbers with defensive ability. Yes, he gets a lot of blocks, but the Heat's defense is a lot worse. It's significantly worse when he's on the court, and that limits his playing time. We know that if he plays 35 minutes, big fantasy numbers are going to come, and we're going to love it. But in a similar case to Terrence Jones, not quite to the same level, is that he's not good enough to play big minutes all the time because he has massive defensive deficiencies, and he hurts the team, and he has free throw issues, and he's not a real great offensive player as well, and that limits what he's able to to provide to us fantasy-wise. Now, he's still been a top 20 guy, even though he's shooting only 54% from the free throw line, and that's fueled by almost 4 blocks a game and 11 rebounds a game. But it's 0.3 assists, 0.5 steals, no threes, obviously, bad free throw percentage, and limited scoring. He fits very certain teams. He's not for everybody, and there are going to be nights like this when he plays limited minutes because his defense is bad. And then you play 35 minutes and you'll go for 20 and 15 with 6 blocks and he'll be the monstrous line of the night. This is just what's going to happen with Whiteside, but don't look at this and go, oh, why did he get benched? I'm not going to go on an Eric Spoelstra rant because he's just a bad defender. He provides a lot of open lanes for teams to drive into. He gambles too much. He's just not in the right position. He racks up block stats and that's one part of it, but as an overall defender, he's just not a good defender, and that's a concern, and that's why he does get benched. And the Heat generally look better with Bosch playing center. And I think that would be more of the case if Josh McRoberts was actually back and healthy, but we might not ever see that again, unfortunately, with the way that he's going with his injuries. And that's another thing why I think that they probably won't re-sign him next year, Whiteside. Someone will pay him big money. I'm not sure it's going to be the Heat, though. I guess we've got a few months to wait until that happens, but we are now in 2016, obviously, so the 2016 draft and free agency class is coming up. That is the nightly awards. What we'll do now is we'll bring up the ultimate perfect, whatever we want to call it, lineup for DFS. Okay, Friday's perfect lineup. At point guard, Damian Lillard, 63.6, and Russell Westbrook, 56.9. I mentioned on Westbrook yesterday that playing against the Lakers the last two games, they've smashed the Lakers and he's played 27 minutes. Well, somehow the Lakers kept it close, so Westbrook had to play basically the whole game, and he put up a huge line. So that was it's obviously great if you took that gamble, but it was a big gamble. At shooting guard, Lou Williams, 50.9. He went crazy. He scored, I think, 20 points in the last quarter, ended with over 40. Big, big night from him, and Klay Thompson had 50.7, and that was always a nice matchup for him going against the CJ McCollum, Damian Lillard backcourt, who isn't exactly known for their defense. Small forwards, Andrew Wiggins, 42.9. That was a surprising one to me. In fact, DFS was very low scoring in terms of the most of the ones I saw in tournaments and double-ups. The scores weren't big. We're talking about, you know, the top scores getting 309 and 310, which is not big at all, when sometimes you'll go 360, 350 regularly. Now, the total for this lineup is 415.7, but if you had have assembled this lineup, you definitely have Gray's Almanac. Toby Harris had been really struggling. He put up a big one. He went 38.4 in this one. At power forward, when Anthony Davis went out, that allowed a couple of Pelicans to put up big numbers. Ryan Anderson put up 38.2, and you couldn't have known that Davis was going to go out after 3 minutes. Kristaps Porzingis. I said Porzingis. I shouldn't be saying it. I should be letting Stephen A. say it.
Porzingis.
Yes, there we go. Porzingis played 40. No, he put up 40.2 points, and he was the key for the Knicks against the Spurs, and that's surprising as well to think that going up against the Spurs, he was able to have such a good game. And the other one at center, Alexey Ajinsa, you would have had no hope of putting him in. He has been criminally underused by the Pelicans all season, having Kendrick Perkins and Omer Asik preferred to him, even scrubs like Dante Cunningham playing over him. And you've heard me railing on Elvin Gentry for it all season. Finally, Ajinsa gets in because Davis gets injured and puts up a huge line, 33.9 points. I love Alexey Ajinsa. I love his fantasy game. But that was a complete guess if you're putting Alexey Ajinsa into a lineup, as were a couple of these other things, because not much really made sense DFS-wise. I'm not trying to make excuses for my lineup because, I had Anthony Davis and TJ Warren combined for 6 points. Not much I could really do about that, but a lot of these were very in-game incident related, especially the Anderson and Ajinsa ones. All right, let's bring up these box scores now and start getting into these games in a little bit more detail. There we go. All right, the first game is the Toronto Raptors and the Washington Wizards. The Raptors owned the Wizards again, another victory for them in the regular season. They're hoping, obviously, they can translate that into playoff success. Kyle Lowry, 21-10, 4 assists, 4 steals, a block, 3 threes. That's a great game going up against John Wall. Huge from him. And DeMar DeRozan, 35-8. He had a triple one as well. A big, big night for him, especially the 12 of 13 from the free throw line. From a DFS point of view, the salary was pretty high for DeRozan, but the matchup looked favorable. It was his best game in probably his last four or five. Bizarro, Jonas Valanciunas showed up. He played 30 minutes, but scored just 7 points. Took only four shots and hit one of them. Had three rebounds, but he had a steal and four blocks. Let's hope that his offense returns and those defensive stats stay, because that was always something that was keeping Valanciunas from being elite. As much as I've loved him, he's never been able to get these big bulk block numbers, but he's done it a couple of times this year. He has really increased his block rate, and that's great from Valanciunas getting back from injury. Another 30 minutes for him, so that's bye-bye Bismack Biyombo, even though Biyombo still had four blocks and six rebounds in his 18 minutes. Terrence Ross played only 18 minutes. He had to leave with a back issue. He had 7 points. The back issue doesn't appear serious, but if it is, that means that James Johnson is going to have to play more. So is Corey Joseph. So both of those guys would be worth looking at. If you need solid overall production, Joseph's the guy. If you want defensive stats, Johnson's the guy. Neither of them are must-add guys to me, because I don't think that Ross is a long-term issue. But if you're desperate across the weekend to stream guys in, Ross can probably be dropped and add whoever sort of fits what you need to do. The power forward poo-poo platter, Luis Scola, had 11-5 in his 20 minutes, and Patrick Patterson played 28 minutes. Now, why would you play... Calm down. Why would you play Patrick Patterson 28 minutes when all he does in 28 minutes is one assist? He did nothing. He did not score. He didn't get a rebound. He didn't get a rebound as a power forward playing 28 minutes. No rebounds. No steals. No blocks. And he took two shots in 28 minutes. It must have been because the Wizards had those defenders on him, like those power forward big men, like Jared Dudley and Drew Gooden. They must have shut Patrick Patterson down. Why are you playing him 28 minutes? Play James Johnson at the four. Play Joseph at the three. Play Luis Scola more than 20 minutes, who actually went 11-5. Dwayne Casey doesn't frustrate me as much as he has in the past, but still, that's an odd one to me. On to the Wizards, Otto Porter, 16-5, 3 assists, 2 steals, a block and a 3. A big night from him. He's come back from his injury really, really strong. And Marcin Gortat, 12-10 with 3 blocks, had a real slow start, and he's kicking things up a notch as well. Johnny Wall played 37 minutes, 21 points. He also blocked 3 shots and had 2 triples. So they're big contributions from Wall there. Only the 4 assists, not his greatest night, but still some really nice out-of-position numbers from John Wall. Also 7 turnovers. Yuck. Ramon Sessions, 14-4 in his 22 minutes, a block and a 3. His minutes are going to vary, though, with the return of Gary Neal and apparently the imminent return of Bradley Beal. His initial target was end of January. Apparently he's traveling with a team. That doesn't mean that he's going to play. It could mean that we see him next weekend, though. That would be my aim or my idea of when Beal returns to the court, probably not any earlier. Jared Dudley played 29 minutes. He went 5-4-4 with 2 steals and a 3, and he's just not must-own for 12-10 leagues. And Garrett Temple continues to play 32 minutes, not do much. 7 points, 3 assists, a 3 and 2 steals is not bad, but we can leave him on the waiver wire in most formats. The Orlando Magic and the Brooklyn Nets. No Lord Alfred Payton again for the Magic. Victor Oladipo, 36 minutes, 20-9, 2 assists, 3 steals, 1 block, 6 triples, which was a career high. He's really firing at the moment. So he suffered for 2 months with Scott Skiles, and now he's being unleashed and he's putting up some massive numbers. Let's hope, fingers crossed, that it sticks. Nick Vucevic back to 36 minutes, 20-10-4, 2 steals and a block. A big night from him. And Toby Harris, I mentioned him in the DFS summary. He played 43 minutes. Just the 9 points on 3 of 15 shooting, so that drops him down to most for standard leagues, but he had 12 rebounds, he had 8 assists, hit a 3, had 2 blocks as well. So some nice contributions in some areas you don't normally expect from Toby. Evan Fournier played through his toe issue, which is an ingrown toenail, by the way. 13 points, 3 threes, 3 assists, 2 steals, and yeah, pretty solid. And if anyone laughs at an ingrown toenail, they're a pain in the ass. I had chronic ingrown toenails when I used to play cricket. Both big toes of my feet. For me to get out and play, if anyone who knows anything about cricket, I was a fast bowler. To me to go out and play, the stress on my toe every day, every time I went out there, it was like layers of cotton wool, band-aids, bandages, 3 pairs of socks just to insulate my foot from the ingrown toenail. And you're running and cutting, your foot's pressing up against the shoe, it gets infected. It's not a nice feeling, for as stupid as it sounds to have an ingrown toenail. playing sport with an ingrown toenail is a massive pain in the ass. So I understand Fournier having some issues with it, going out and gutting it out, but it definitely is not a comfortable feeling. Aaron Gordon got back to 23 minutes, 14 and 5. He hit a couple of threes as well. Oh, it's so, his upside, his potential is there. And it needs to be unlocked by Skiles, giving him 27 minutes. At this point, if you're at the bottom of the standings, I don't think that you stash Aaron Gordon. If you're in a roto league where you've got bench spots and games limits where you can keep a guy there, yeah, I add him. If I'm at the top of the standings, I add him and see what happens over the next 3 or 4 weeks, because he could be a top 70 guy if he was given 30 minutes. Now, he probably won't get 30 minutes, but Andrew Nicholson doesn't need to play 9. Jason Smith doesn't need to play 12. These things don't need to happen. Gordon can play some extra, so there's big scope for him. But he might just stay at 20 minutes for the next 3 weeks. And that, if you're in last place or eighth place trying to move up 2 or 3 spots, it's really hard to justify doing that. So it's all position dependent. And it's also a case of the top teams do that, it's the strong becoming stronger. And that's stronger. And that's one of the real benefits of getting a hot start, I guess. You're able to take some more risks and really solidify your team for the end of the season. And that's why in a lot of situations, when it comes to draft time, guys who are injured, I don't normally draft. Now, I did draft Kyrie Irving in one draft this year because I was able to get him at pick 41. But, say, last season, I was all off on Kevin Durant. I didn't draft him in the first round because a lot of people were saying, that's fine, he'll miss the first 6 weeks, and then you come home and then you dominate your playoffs. But it puts you in such an odd spot where you're at the bottom of your standings, and then you've got to consistently win big each week, and you can't afford to take risks, you can't afford to stash, you can't afford to do any of that sort of stuff because of that situation. And that's one of the downfalls of drafting a guy who you know at the start of the season is going to miss the first 2 months, because you don't have that flexibility to be sitting at the top of the standings and be able to take risks on guys like this. Ooh, got a bit distracted there. Let's talk Nets. Shane Larkin, 30 minutes again, 12, 4 and 3, a 3 and a steal. This is why you owned him. He's not going to blow you away. He's not going to be an all-star, but those numbers are really good. And the numbers from the last game are really good. You're going to get threes, you're going to get assists, you're going to get steals, and he's going to be a top 100 guy, I'm pretty sure, for the rest of the way here. Thad Young, 11 and 9, not too exciting from him. And Brooke Lopez went 17 and 8 with a steal and a block. Just not a good percentage night from Brooke, going 6 of 15 and 5 of 8 from the free throw line. We'll give him a pass there. Joe Johnson had another big game. 39 minutes for Johnson, 13, 3 and 3, 3 triples, a steal. That's 3 out of about his last 4 or 5 games where he's had really big performances since Jarrett Jack's gone down. He's worth looking at in 12-team leagues. He's not must-owned by any stretch, but he is worth looking at just because this production's increased. He's been a really good source of assists for a shooting guard this year, but you need to really be careful of your field goal percentage. Speaking of field goal percentage, Bojan Bogdanović had 2 points in 30 minutes. He missed all 6 of his shots. That was bad. The opportunity for him is definitely here with the injury to Jack, but he hasn't really grasped it. He's still playing big minutes, but he's really a borderline 12-team league guy at the moment. The next game, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Minnesota Timberwolves. J.R. Smith has now hit 18 three-pointers in his last 3 games. He hit 5 in this game in just 19 minutes, racked up 27 points and 2 steals on 10 of 12 shooting. This is a ridiculous JR hot streak. It will stop. It will cool down. There is no doubt about that. But for now, he has to be owned. Iman Shumpert was great. 29 minutes for Shump, 23 points, 4 steals, 3 triples. These are games that are out of the box for these players, especially Shumpert. This is not who he is. I don't think he's really a 12-team league guy. Tristan Thompson played 29 minutes, went 6-7. Kyrie Irving, 27 minutes, 13, 2, and 2. The game was under control very easily in this one, as they smashed the Wolves. So, guys didn't need to play much. Kevin Love, 29 and 4 back in Minnesota. LeBron James, 13, 12, and 8 with a steal and 2 blocks. A very easy triple-double almost for James. Even Timofey Mozgov played 24 minutes in this one. 7 and 9 with 2 blocks. So, don't read too much into the Cavs' rotation in this one. Interesting, though, Mo Williams was active, but didn't play at all. He is completely out of the rotation, even in a blowout. So obviously, if you were holding on to Mo and hoping something was going to happen, I don't think you would have been, but we can move on from him. On the Timberwolves, Karl Anthony Towns, 22 and 6 in 35 minutes with 3 assists on 11 of 14 shooting. No blocks, which is a bit disappointing, but otherwise, that's pretty impressive. And Rick Rubio played 26 minutes, 8, 4 and 6, 2 threes, 2 steals, And that's a pretty nice night from Rubio. You got almost what you'd like, a few more assists, but otherwise that's pretty standard for him. Shabazz Muhammad, big night for him. His best game of the season. 22 points in 26 minutes. He hit a couple of threes, two rebounds, and two assists. His play has definitely increased as of late, and it's come at the expense of guys like Zach LaVine, but I'm not rushing to go and add Shabazz Muhammad anywhere. Kevin Garnett started this game and played 7 minutes, and I've got no problem whatsoever with that. And Nikola Pekovic played 15 minutes, 2, 2, and 3. I'm not adding him in a 12-team league, and I don't even want him in a 14-team league, to be honest. Gorgui Dieng has dropped off considerably. He's played just 21 minutes here, 2 points, 6 rebounds, and a steal. He still needs to look. The 2 minutes that Adrian Payne played didn't need to be played by him. The 10 minutes that Nemanja Bjelica played, they didn't need to be played by him. Dieng needs to play more of this. He's still ranked inside the top 100 for the year, so I'm still holding, but the last couple of weeks haven't been impressive. He's ranked outside the top 175 in that time. The numbers are down. His percentages are way down over that time frame as well, and that's really impacting his rankings. His value comes from his steals, blocks, and percentages, and his ability to get rebounds. I hold for now, but it's not a very strong hold. Also, Kevin Martin, of course, he was back in the rotation. Yeah, I don't know why either. 13 minutes for 2 points. We can ignore him. And speaking of getting ignored, Zach LaVine, 22 minutes for LaVine, 2, 4, and 2. He hasn't had a good game, and I don't even know when. If there's someone you want to go and add, go and do it, because he's just not doing anything. Yes, his potential's there, but he's not being used much. He's not being used enough, and it could change in a month, but he racks up fantasy stats when he's a point guard. He plays bad when he's a point guard. It's another one of those situations like Terrence Jones that I mentioned earlier, Hassan Whiteside even. His fantasy stats are great, but his actual value on the court is not in that situation. And that's going to limit his playing time. And that's what's happening with LaVine here. And of course, Tayshaun Prince played 22 minutes and registered 2 steals and nothing else. It would have been one of the more comical lines of the night if we didn't have Patrick Patterson playing as well. The Denver Nuggets and the Memphis Grizzlies. Danilo Gallinari is absolutely roasting at the moment. He came back from that ankle injury and is just balls out, basically. He is averaging over his last four, 25.5 points, 2 triples, 6.5 rebounds, 3 assists, 0.8 steals on 48 and 79% shooting. He has been fantastic this year. He's inside the top 40 of the year. A lot of people weren't buying into Gallinari based on what happened at the end of last season when he was legit a top 10 guy for a big stretch down the end of the season. He has looked great on this team. He is absolutely flying. Kenneth Faried was out of this game due to personal issues. I think he had a kid, if I remember correctly. Well, not him. I don't think he'd been carrying a baby around, but his partner had a child. Darrell Arthur got the start, and whenever he gets a start, or you know he's going to get starters minutes, the fantasy numbers come. 12 and 9 for Arthur in 26 minutes, 2 assists and 2 blocks. It would have been a really nice daily fantasy play at his salary. What about Yusuf Nurkic? After his big game, he only played 18 minutes, and that was foul trouble, and that's big issue for him. 5 fouls in 18 minutes, still 6 and 6 and a block, so still racked up some numbers. That is going to limit him. Nikola Jokic only played 19 minutes here, and Joffrey Lavernier returned to the rotation and went 6-7 in his 19 minutes. Obviously, Nurkic is still someone that we want to own. The other intriguing thing in this one is we saw a return of JJ Hickson, who I'm sure many of you forgot even existed. He played 11 minutes. Jokic 9-5 in his 19 minutes. And Gary Harris played 31, 11-5 with a 3 and a steal. I like him for 12-team leagues. I think that there is some value there. It's not a stronghold. And what about everybody's boyfriend, Will Barton? He was bad. He was really bad. 21 minutes for Barton, 6 points, 9 rebounds on 3 of 11 shooting. Now, I don't really understand what's happening. The last 4 games, Will Barton is ranked 327th. And to be honest, that's the Will Barton I know and love from everything I'd seen from him in his career up until whatever the hell's going on this year. Now, I don't think that he's regressed back to being that bad and the first 33 games of this season were a mirage. But I also think the first 33 games of this season were somewhat of a mirage. He's not that good, and I've said it plenty of times that I can't understand how it's happening. The last 3 games haven't been, or the last 4 games haven't been good. His minutes have been reduced. He's not shooting the ball well at all. And that was a concern I had with him, is the fact that he'd never been a good shooter, but this year he was shooting a good 4 or 5% higher from, I think 8% higher from 3, 4 or 5 from the field, a 5 or 6% rise in his free throw percentage, and all that's dropped off over this last week. This might be an opportunity to buy low if someone like me believes that he's no good, and maybe he returns to what he was able to do to the start of the season. But to think that this is just a tiny blip because Will Barton is everything, I don't think that's really a great way to go, because he just hasn't ever been a good player ever. And to think that all of a sudden he was this magic player, something had to drop, and it's dropped pretty severely. He will bounce back, I'm sure. He is not someone you should be dropping. No, not at all. As much I'm not a fan of him, he's not someone I'm dropping. But this is a very interesting slump, and we'll see how he responds to it, and we'll see how the team responds to it, because he's not playing well, and they're just cutting his minutes. And that's not the sign of someone where I think they go, we believe in you as a foundational piece. We're still going to give you 30 minutes, because they're going, you're not playing well. See you later. You're playing 10, 12 less minutes a game. And it's odd. Very interesting to see how it plays out. Still no Emmanuel Mudiay for the Nuggets as well. On to the Grizzlies. No Mike Conley, no Courtney Lee. So Mario Chalmers started. He played 40 minutes and everyone was shitting themselves from a DFS point of view when he started off terribly. He ended up okay. Not a great night. 12, 6, and 4 with 2 threes. Definitely not what we saw from him the other night. And that was clearly to be expected, but his overall production was okay. I streamed him in a couple of my seasonal leagues. I'm probably going to be moving on from him now. It was just a one-game thing for today. Tony Allen really benefited too. He played 38 minutes, 10-9 with 3 steals and a block. That's great for fantasy. I'm not adding him, but I am making sure that Matt Barnes is owned in my league. 33 minutes for him, 15-7, 3 threes, 3 assists. I know people are very quick to dismiss Matt Barnes, but he can have consistent fantasy value, and I don't really see him losing this role. He could. Don't see it. Zach Randolph with a bit of a surprising line as well. 24-6 for Randolph in 28 minutes. Also 3 blocks, which is normally about a month's production for Randolph. So savor that. And Marc Gasol, 12-4-3 is not good. Neither is 5 of 17, but added 5 steals and a block to sort of salvage his night. And Jeff Green went 16-9 with 3 threes. Newly signed Elliot Williams also played 10 minutes and scored 2 points. So the guys not named Tony Allen, Matt Barnes, Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol, Jeff Green, and Mario Chalmers, so those six players, the players not named them, scored a combined 2 points, 2 rebounds, 1 steal. That is just, it's bad. It's fair enough. There's a lot of injuries there, but that's just not good contributions from Vince Carter, Elliot Williams, Jermichael Green, and James Ennis in his 13 seconds. Don't expect him to really contribute too much in that area. Jeff Green, he's a borderline 12-team league guy for me, as is Tony Allen, as I mentioned earlier. The Indiana Pacers and the New Orleans Pelicans, Jan Mahinmi went off. New Orleans front court is legit a bump for big men. 17-10 for Mahinmi. He had 4 blocks as well. He's a guy that should be owned in most leagues, not necessarily by your team, because he's about a 56% free throw shooter, but rebounds are nice, block shots, get some steals, good field goal percentage, and he doesn't need many minutes to do it. CJ Miles also got back on track, sort of. 28 minutes for him, 15-7, 3 threes, a steal, and a block. He is streaky, expect it. Monte Ellis, 3 straight games in a row, that's a tautology. 3 straight games with over 7 assists, 7 assists or more. He had 8 here to go with a steal, a block, and 10 points, and really handling the ball quite a bit. Well, George Hill struggled here, 7-5-2. He'd been playing really well before this Hill, so I'm not too concerned. If I pick Jordan Hill up because of his strong play, that's done. He played 13 minutes. Miles Turner played 11. And LaVoy Allen started and played 20 minutes and went 7-2. So that Paul George at the 4 thing just hasn't been happening for the last few games for the Pacers. Nah, or to start the game anyway, because Allen's been starting, but then CJ Miles comes in and George moves to the 4 that way. On to the Pelicans. Anthony Davis, 3 minutes, 2 points, 1 rebound, 1 assist. I tweeted this out before. I'm writing it in my article for Basketball Monster as well, but the amount of hate tweets and negative comments being thrown towards Anthony Davis after he got injured here is astonishing to me. Now, it is frustrating. I understand that. I had him in my lineups, and I saw Anthony Davis out, questionable to return back, and I went, oh, are you joking? Like, it pissed me off. Jeez, come on. Like, that's unfortunate. But two things piss me off. The comments and tweets of never rostering this guy again. Really? Really? You're never rostering him again. Yes, he gets injured, but he's missed three games this year. He has played under 10 minutes in two games. It's not really a big chunk, really. He's had two other games under 20 minutes. So that's four times this year he's probably affected DFS lineups. And in one of those games, I think it was against the Nuggets, he went like 27-7 in 20 minutes when he was sick and still actually put up 45 DraftKings or FanDuel points. So that doesn't even count. So it's probably three times this year he's affected people from DFS. That's not look, it's probably more than average, but it's not like it's happening every game. And then you get the tweets, this guy's garbage, he's trash. Like, seriously, really? He's garbage? Okay, cool. I'm sure you take him on one-on-one and you'll beat him. And the next thing is that I hate, he's soft. Davis is soft. It's terrible. He's soft. Man up. You're all sounding like Byron Scott, people saying that. Man up. He's soft. As you say that, typing on a computer. These guys are professional athletes. Everyone's body is different. Everybody's body responds to pain in a different way, and it's nothing that you control. You don't have a choice in saying, ow, nerves, don't respond to pain that way. You can't choose that. You can't choose how your nerves are positioned in your body. Are they close to the surface? Are they extra sensitive? Are they whatever? Or do I have numbness that I can't feel? You can't control that. You can't control that as much as you can't control your natural hair color or your sexual orientation. You can't control your body's response to pain. Or he might get hit and his muscles seize up. You can't just go to your brain, muscles, stop seizing, and then they do. It doesn't work that way. It's out of his control. And it pisses us off. It costs people fantasy money. I understand that. But it's not a personal attack on this guy. And I saw so much of that happening today. And it just is odd to me. Like, get upset. Get upset. God damn it. And Davis out again. Like, do that. But don't accuse the guy of not being a man, which is another whole issue in itself, or being soft, or thinking that he doesn't want to come back in, or that he's too weak to come back. It's all bullshit. Like, the guy's a professional athlete. You can't talk about the way that he reacts to injury or to pain. You don't know. And yes, it's unfortunate. But really, sorry about that rant, but I saw it today and it bothered me. It bothered me seeing all these people tweeting things about how he's garbage, he's trash, he's soft, he's weak, he's not a man. Like, that's fine. He could kick all of your asses with two hands tied behind his back. No doubt. And I'm not directing this at the listeners of this podcast because I'm sure it wasn't you, or if it was a very small minority. But the frustration gets to you, I know. But it doesn't require personal attacks. And some of you will probably tweet at me and give me personal attacks for this. But it's fine. It doesn't deserve personal attacks on a guy. Now, I'll go and attack people. Sorry, this is getting ranty. I'll give personal attacks on dumb shit that coaches do. Because that's a choice. Like, that's a legit choice. When Byron Scott says something dumb or does something dumb, he's choosing to say those words. But that's fine. When someone does something that it's a choice, that's when I feel they can be attacked. But for something like this, it didn't sit well with me. I apologize for that rant. Tyreke Evans, he really took advantage of Davis being out. 27, 7 and 5, 3 threes, 4 steals. Big, big line from Tyreke. And Alexia Ginso, I referenced him earlier, he got 26 minutes. Only the 4 points for him, but 12 boards, 3 assists, 5 steals and a block. He is a real fantasy machine and is massive when Davis goes out. If Davis happens to miss any time, and Ginso might be a good ad for one game, two games, it's criminal to me that they don't play him and they play spuds like Omer Asik over him. Speaking of spuds, Norris Cole played 23 minutes and went 1 of 9. 4 points, 1 rebound, 1 assist, and 2 steals. This guy is bad. He's just bad. Don't play him 30 minutes. I'm glad they didn't play him 30 minutes here. He's just not good. And look, I picked him up in a league, in a 12-team league, because Elvin Gentry was inexplicably playing him 30 minutes, and I couldn't ignore 30 minutes of playing time and hope that something felt right, but he's just not good. Drew Holiday got 35 minutes here. I'm happy with that. 15 points, 4 assists, 4 steals, and 2 blocks, so a good night from him. And Ryan Anderson had a very full line. 21-6, 4 triples, 2 assists, 3 steals, and 2 blocks. He'd been in somewhat of a slump, and good to see him break out of it. They changed the starting lineup again. Alonzo G moved to the bench, and he played 6 seconds. Yep. Dante Cunningham back in the starting lineup, 26 minutes, 4-2, and he's another one of those guys who just can't do anything with the playing time he gets. And Quincy Pondexter, geez, they need him back. He's not a great player, but he's better than Dante Cunningham, and he's better than Alonzo G. The next game, the Dallas Mavericks and the Milwaukee Bucks, all the Dallas starters were back in action. Dirk, 20-9, 4 triples, a steal, and a block. A good night from him. And Devin Harris exploded here. He only played 19 minutes, but he had 19 points, 3 triples, and 3 assists. He can be left on the waiver wire in leagues. And Zaza Pachulia, 9 points, 15 boards, and a steal against his former team. And Wes Matthews was okay, nothing too great from him. 12 points. You like the 3 triples, the 2 steals, and the block, but just not a great night overall. Now, speaking of not great nights, Darren Williams and Chandler Parsons. Williams went 5-2-6 in 24 minutes, and Parsons went 3-3-3 with 2 blocks in their 21 minutes. No injuries to report of. They were just very ineffective, so don't get too worried there. JJ Barea, 19 minutes, 8 points, 5 assists. So still productive, but with Williams back, his role is going to be limited. So if you added him in a 12-team league, you can move on there. Michael Carter-Williams is balling. He is on fire. 15-12-8, 5 steals and a block from him. Just racking up counting stats, almost back to his Philadelphia days. In the last month, he is the 33rd ranked player. Yes, Michael Carter-Williams is the 33rd ranked player over the last month. He is also shooting in that time per frame 50% from the field. 50. He shot 39.6 last year. Yes, he's still a 61% shooter from the free throw line, and that can hurt. And you would have known that going into the season. I've got him on a punt free throw team, and I'm wrapped. The benching at the start of the year was stupid. Didn't last too long, thanks to some injuries, but he is on fire. His last month has yielded 15 points, 6 rebounds, 6.5 assists, 2 steals, 0.8 blocks. And you'll hear people talk, he doesn't hit any threes. I'd rather him didn't hit threes and not take them, then hit them, create bad shots, limit his playing time, affect his field goal percentage. I talked about this at some point in the preseason about a lot of people, I need my point guards to hit threes. Well, no, you don't, because you can go get a power forward that hits threes. If you draft Michael Carter-Williams and Ryan Anderson together, you get a power forward that doesn't block shots, but you get a point guard who then makes up for it by adding his blocks or getting some defensive numbers or rebounding more aggressively. I don't need guys to do certain. I don't say point guards must hit threes. I just appreciate the other things he's able to do and build a team around it. And he's playing fantastically at the moment after a really, really bad start to the year. Michael Carter-Williams is definitely getting it going, so it's great to see, because he is one of my favorite players from a fantasy point of view. From a real-life point of view, he's not all that great to watch, but I like watching his numbers accumulate in fantasy. OJ Mayo, I thought for the last two games that he was going to have a bigger role. Didn't work out, but it did here. 35 minutes, 11-5-6, 3 triples, a steal and a block. He's playing because there's no Jared Bayless, and General Grievous Vasquez is out as well. And this is the role he had at the start of the year. Don't think we need to go and necessarily add him, but you might want to grab him because he was a top 100 guy for that stretch back in early December. And the opportunity is here for him again to do that. John Hansen out of the blocks for 16 points in 20 minutes. A steal and a block, but his minutes are too unpredictable to rely upon. And speaking of minutes, Greg Monroe, only 28 here. 9-12 with a steal. He just, I don't know, there's just something about the way that they're using him. And the fit with Milwaukee was never great, but they're just not using him in a great way. He is ranked over the last 2 weeks 83rd. He is playing less than 30 minutes over the last 2 months of the season, 14.5 and 10. He was on fire to start the year, and they're just limiting him, and some of that is defense, but it's not great if you own him in a fantasy league. Chris Middleton, 27-3-5, so his scoring continued. And Jabari Parker played 30 minutes, so that's a good sign. Not great production, 10-3-2 with a couple of steals. And Giannis really struggled, 5-5 in 33 minutes for Adetokunbo. An assist, a steal, and a block. So still provided those peripheral numbers, but when you shoot 25% from the field and from the free throw line, it's not your night. The New York Knicks and the San Antonio Spurs We have to start with the one and only Kristaps.
Well, then just
28-11 for Porzingis, 3 threes and a steal. He got his field goal percentage right up, and that's really all he needs to be a more consistent fantasy guy. He'd get that field goal percentage up. Great night from him. And against the Spurs, it's even more impressive. Melo went 20-12 with a couple of threes and a couple of blocks. And what about my boyfriend, Aaron Aflalo? He wasn't good. 40 points for him. No, it wasn't. Try again. 40 minutes for him. 8 points, 2 threes, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and a block. And I'm pretty sure my thoughts on him are fairly well documented. Robin Lopez, 34 minutes. The minutes are definitely back in his favor. He should be owned in all 12-team leagues. 12-3-3 for him. And that role is there. The production's there. Yeah, it's needed. And Jose Calderon got 32 minutes again. Only scored 4 points, but those 5 assists that he provides, and he can provide on a pretty significant basis, are really important. Jerry and Grant also looked a lot better in this one. 15 minutes for him. 6-2-2. It's not crazy to think that he gets the job by March. Maybe it's a little bit crazy, but he is starting to play a little bit better now, which is good for him if you own him in a dynasty format. On the Spurs, Kawhi 19-12 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. Danny Green had probably his best game of the year. He only scored 8 points, but 2 triples, 2 steals, 3 blocks, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. It's the quintessential Danny Green sort of game. That makes 2 good games from him in the last 2.5 months. Much like I spoke about with Aaron Gordon earlier, if you're in a strong position, add him. See what happens. See if he can continue it. If you're down the bottom, like holding on to him and thinking, well, maybe we get another one of these games and it doesn't happen for 3 weeks, it hurts you and it really impacts your ability to come back. But this is why we love him from a fantasy point of view. This is why he was drafted in the 4th or 5th or 6th round, because you know, 2 threes, 2 steals, 3 blocks, there's probably one player in the league that can do that, and it's probably him on a regular basis anyway. Manu was fantastic, 16-5-3. 2 triples and a block. He is, I'm going to talk about it a bit later, he is inside the top 100 for the last 2 weeks. And Tony Parker returned from his hip issue, 16-5-8. LaMarcus Aldridge, 16-9. Not much else there. Tim Duncan only played the 21 minutes. And so that moved Patty Mills back to the bench. David West back to the bench as well. The Miami Heat and the Phoenix Suns. Big night from Goran Dragic. And I mentioned on yesterday's show, revenge game. Now, I want to really clarify something. Revenge game is not a lock, not a real sort of phenomenon. It doesn't happen all the time. It's very much like contract year to me, where you can use it as part of a narrative. And sometimes there are different types of revenge. Like this one to me was different. You know that he was pissed at Phoenix, like he was really pissed at them. Sometimes you'll see a team going back to play their former team, and they're not necessarily pissed, and they're not upset, and they don't have a grudge. Dragic had a grudge, and you had the feeling that Miami is, and the way Miami is, they're very supportive of their players, and I had this feeling that Spoelstra was going to say, you go and show this team, you stick it up their ass, and you show them what you can do. And it's exactly what happened. 22 points, 3 threes, 7 assists, and 2 steals. Coincidentally, Amari Stoudemire, formerly player of the Suns, played 13 minutes out of nowhere. You know who else used to play for the Suns last season? Gerald Green. And he played 34 minutes and went 21-4-3 with 2 threes and a steal. The Heat made a concerted effort to use the former Suns players. That doesn't always happen. You know, revenge game is not a real players get a 15% bump playing their old team. It doesn't happen like that. There are certain cases when it does. There's also plenty of cases where it just doesn't work at all. And that's the same as contract years. You can say, this guy was in a contract year, this guy was in a contract year, and then you forget about the ones who weren't in contract years, who were terrible. It balances out. But if you're really smart about it, and no, that's a bad phrasing because I don't want to sound like I'm coming off by saying that I'm smart. But if you think about it, you could just feel that this was a good one for Dragic. And there's going to be plenty of revenge games this season. And I'm not going to go and think that they're going to be, you know, really good plays and have big boosts. But this one really stood out to me as that. Dwayne Wade was quite good here as well. 27 points, a steal and 2 blocks, not much else. But some fantastic percentages, 9 of 14 from the field and 9 of 10 from the free throw line. Chris Bosh, quiet to start, but came alive at the end, hit a really key 3. 14 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, a couple of threes and a couple of steals. And Justice Winslow grabbed 10 boards in his 23 minutes, but he is as big as an offensive zero as pretty much there is in the league. Apologies to Tayshaun Prince. And Luol Deng played 29 minutes, went 10-6-4 with 2 steals, and that's just such a Luol Deng line. That is a line where you own him in a 12-team roto league, and you can't really deal with him in a head-to-head league, I don't think. On to the Suns. shockingly, stuff was mixed up and stuff changed and things we can't explain happened. TJ Warren played 19 minutes. Of course he did, because he played 36 in the last game, so he probably should go back to 19. 2 points, 2 rebounds. He still has to be owned. Devin Booker played 37 minutes, went 16-6 with a 3. He still be owned. PJ Tucker, yeah, he was dealing with a thigh bruise. He only played 24 in the last game. Let's play him 41. 5-11, 2 steals and a block. He needs to be owned. Brandon Knight, 26-4-4, a decent night then. But then we see Archie Goodwin return to the rotation and go 9-4-4. And he's a guy that I do really like. But this hasn't happened enough. Markieff Morris played 6 minutes for God knows what reason. Tyson Chandler played 26 minutes and went 8-6, and he just looked bad out there. Alex Len, 13 minutes, 5-1. Mirza Teletovic was great again, but played way less minutes than he's been playing. 18 minutes for Teletovic, 13 points with 3 triples and a steal. He's a great source of threes, but the minutes continually jerked around by Hornacek. There was no Ronnie Price in this game. Shocking. That's real disappointing that there was no Ronnie Price, I'm sure. But, yeah, so why did Warren get less minutes when there was... yeah, a guy, less guys in the backcourt. I can't explain it. I can't explain Hornacek. For now, Booker, Warren, Tucker, Own, Knight, yes. Teletovic, maybe. Lua, no. Len, no. Morris, no. Chandler, maybe. And I'm talking sort of a standard 12-team format there. The Golden State Warriors versus the Portland Trailblazers. Steph Curry did play. He didn't need to play much, though. 29 minutes, 26-3-9 with 4 triples. He got it done in limited time. And Klay Thompson went 36-6-5 with 7 triples on ridiculous 13 of 22 shooting. So big nights for those guys against a pretty bad Portland backcourt. Draymond Green, another triple-double, a very low-end one here. 11-13-10, added a block, and he's we know how good that he is. And, yeah, Festus Ezeli returned, played 7 minutes, 2-3-1 block. Yep, we don't really care. And Andrew Bogut played 18 minutes. Harrison Barnes, 23, 7 points, 3 assists, and a steal. And Andre Iguodala down to 19 minutes, oddly enough. They gave extra run to Ian Clark. Brandon Rush got more minutes. And Iguodala was reduced here, 2-4-3. He obviously wasn't needed, but it's going to be hard to own him in 12-team leagues now that Barnes is back. You can in certain situations, but not in every league. On to the Blazers. Alan Crabb had 18 points and... to go along with everything that he normally does, he added 1 rebound, no assists, and 2 steals. He's a borderline 12-team league guy, but I don't reckon you could find better options. And the front court was just spread all over the place. Myers Leonard, 17 minutes, had a triple one. Al-Farouq Aminu, 20 minutes. Ed Davis, 16 minutes. Noah Vonleh, 17 minutes. Mason Plumlee, 18 minutes. Just no reliability there. The only guy that I really want to hold in a 12-team league is Plumlee. I don't think you need to deal with Leonard. Aminu is touch and go for me. Davis, no thanks. Yeah, just not a good spot for those big men in Portland with them getting sort of jerked around all the time. CJ McCollum, not the best night from him. 7 of 23 shooting. Still ended up with 17 points, but that's basically just volume. Had 3 triples, 3 rebounds, and 3 assists. The last game of the night, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Los Angeles Lakers. Kevin Durant, 24-7, 2 threes, 2 steals, and a block. A big night from him and Russell Westbrook, 36-12-7. Both of those guys had to play extra minutes because the Lakers kept it competitive somehow, but that's what happened. Enes Kanter, 15-9 in 23 minutes. Just continually a fantasy tease to me, Enes Kanter. That's big points, big rebounds in low minutes, great percentages, but... he'll play 16 minutes in the next game. I can understand owning him in a 12-team league, but he's just going to be shuffled back and forth off rosters. Campaign got 25 minutes, played next to Westbrook. I love it. 11 points for him, a 3, just 1 rebound, 1 assist, and 1 steal, but you know my thoughts on Payne. He is a guy that I'm really, in a 14-team league, I'm even having a look at him now. Serge Ibaka struggled, 7 points, nothing else, just wasn't his night at all, and guys like Dion Waiters and Anthony Morrow didn't provide anything, and shockingly enough, Andre Robertson hit all 3 of his shots for 7 points. On to the Lakers, Lou Williams, 44 points in 35 minutes with 5 triples, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, and 2 steals, and watching Lou Williams play, it made me feel a lot of things about fouls. Now, I'm not going to go into another rant about fouls in this one, but safe to say, I'm not a fan of them. He went to the line 15 times and hit all 15 of them. So that is just massive, massive value from Lou Williams. A huge, huge night from your career night. Larry Nance, 8-6 with 2 steals and a block, just continues to have back-end 12-team league value at the moment, so he's definitely worth a look to me, as does Brandon Bass, 8-5 with 3 assists and a steal. I'd much rather have Nance over Bass, but he's playing some extra minutes at the moment. Roy Hibbert, he's not a must-own, 8-2 with a couple of blocks, and not a bad night from him, but no. D'Angelo Russell tried to play. He did. He lasted 8 minutes and had 2 points in 2 assists. So I imagine that Byron Scott's going out there and calling him soft and telling him to man up, but he was dealing with an ankle problem. So Jordan Clarkson went 17-3-2 with 2 threes and 2 steals, and Kobe went 19-4-6 with a steal and a three. He took 20 shots, including the most ill-advised game-winning attempt that I've seen in a long time. It was terrible, but it's what Kobe's going to do, and combine that with the comments that have come out from Mitch Kupchak in the last couple of days that this season's all about Kobe Bryant with no nod to actual team play, basketball, developing young players, and that franchise is, I know a lot of you are Laker fans and people love the Lakers. It is a horrible way to do business. It is a horrible way to run a team, and to just come out and say that is just not normal to me. And I think that some of the blame goes to Kobe as well. Because I know if it was me and someone said, we're making this whole year about you, you just do whatever you want and stifle everything, I'd be like, are you guys joking? Like, what are you talking about? I'll just play my season. I'll play what it, you know, as much as I can, but I'm not taking near developmental minutes across from these guys. If I loved the Lakers and played for them, I want them to be good. But that's, I'm a different personality to Kobe, and that's why he's playing and making me ins, and while I'm talking shit on a podcast. But it's not, to me, it's not a great business model for the Lakers to go and come out and even say it publicly. Well, we all sort of knew it, but to just go on a minute and go, yeah, we don't care about the young kids. We're just going to let Kobe do what he wants. It's a pretty odd thing to do in my mind. All right, we are having a break now. I've rambled on for way too long, so I apologize for some of those rants there. We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to have some water, get my voice back a little bit, and then we're going to talk DFS for Saturday. We are back, and actually before we get into the DFS stuff, I'm going to do my weekly review for seasonal leagues and talk about the top 20 players, look at some rookies and sophomores, and some under-owned guys that I see in the top 100 of the rankings for the last 2 weeks. So we'll do that for 5 minutes, and then we'll get into DFS. The top 20 players over the last 2 weeks, at number one, actually let's do a countdown. Number 20, Chris Middleton. He's been great. Al Horford at 19, he was slumping a bit, he's back inside the top 20. JJ Redick is number 18th, and I mentioned this when Blake Griffin went down. This is what he does. When Griffin goes down, he becomes, probably not this high, I didn't think, but he becomes a top 40 sort of guy. So he's at 18th, Jim Butler at 17th, Klay Thompson at 16th, Paul Millsap at 15th, Paul George at 14th, Pau Gasol at 13th, DeMarcus Cousins at 12th. He's really coming on very, very strong at the moment. Dwight Howard for head-to-head leagues is 11th, and it's because he's averaging 19 and 12. He's shooting 74% from the field. He's getting you 1.2 blocks a game, and that's exactly what you want from Dwight. Draymond Green at 10, Jim Harden at 9th, KD at 8th, Nerlens Noel at 7th, I think would shock a lot of people, but he's averaging over 2 steals a game, Sorry, yeah, 2 steals a game, over 2 blocks a game, 9.7 boards, 14 points on 69% shooting. He has really, really turned the corner. Let's hope it continues. DeAndre Jordan is 6th, and that's because, again, you're punting his free throws, and you've got 84% field goals, 2.3 blocks, 14 boards. Steph Curry at 5, Kyle Lowry at 4, Kemba Walker at 3rd. He's had a really strong last 2 weeks, a 26.5 scoring average, over 2 threes, 5 rebounds, 2.5 steals. Russ Westbrook is at number 2. Number 1 is actually Damian Lillard. He's only played 3 games, but he's averaging almost 26 points, 4 triples, 8.7 assists, 4 rebounds, 1.7 steals, and a block with 86% free throws. And yes, his 35% from the field is terrible, but hopefully you were taking that into consideration when you drafted him because you knew it was going to be bad, and that's why I've got him at number 1 in the last 2 weeks. As for the rookies, the top 5 rookies over the last 2 weeks, Karl Anthony Towns is at 46, Larry Nance is at 73rd, Kristaps Porzingis is at 78,
Porzingis,
Jahlil Okafor at 102, and Boban Marjanovic at 136. I love me some Marjanovic. The sophomore top 5. Nerlens Noel at 7, as we mentioned. Nikola Mirotic is 79th. Rod Hood is 90th. Clint Capella is 117th. And TJ Warren is 133rd. Next, what we'll have a look at is guys who are inside the top 100 who have less than 50% ownership. Cody Zeller is ranked 45th and he's less than 50% owned. That needs to change. He should be owned everywhere. Jeff Withey at 51. He doesn't need to be owned anymore. He's going to get phased out. PJ Tucker at 61, as I mentioned before, must own. Taj Gibson at 65. Don't really know what to do with him now. Joakim Noah is going to be back pretty soon, but even when Noah was playing, Gibson was starting and playing 30 minutes. Now, does the play of Mirotić mean that we might see less of Gibson and he goes down to, say, 25 minutes and we still get Mirotić playing and we've got Portis playing? I think that you want to own Gibson and just see how it plays out, but he was getting that solid 30-minute role beforehand, even when Noah was playing. Austin Rivers at 67. I think a lot of people will be surprised about that, but he's scoring at a big rate. His field goal percentage isn't bad, and he's hitting a lot of threes as well. So he's probably a short-term guy until Blake comes back, but definitely worth a look. Larry Nance at 73 and Brandon Bass at 75. I'm definitely taking Nance over Bass, but he's been getting a consistent role and playing a lot better than I anticipated he could. Paul Pierce at 81. Yeah, maybe, but I'm not all that keen on grabbing him. John Henson at 83, very, very specialist orientated. Patrick Beverley at 89. David West at 92. We know why that is. That's a couple of missed games from Duncan and LaMarcus Aldridge there. Alan Crabb at 93. He'll drop off a bit with Lillard back. But Jose Calderon at 96. Manu Ginobili at 98. Both of those guys have spots in 12-team leagues, at least for the time being. And rounding out the list, Evan Turner is at 99, and as long as Avery Bradley remains out, I think that he's someone that should be owned in most spots as well. All right, let's talk DFS now. The first game is the Charlotte Hornets and the Los Angeles Clippers. There is no spread for this one. This is an early game as well. Nick Batum is questionable with his toe, and that's the reason that we don't know what the spread is for this one just yet. If Batum doesn't play, it gives more value to Jeremy Lin. Now, I think Lin at 5,300 is still not a bad play, but the Clippers are pretty good at defending guards. So, all in all, not an awesome spot to use him. But if Batum is out, increases. Cody Zeller at 4,900, sub 5,000 for a starting center who dropped 33 in the last game. Yes, DeAndre Jordan's not an ideal matchup for him. But I do think that Cody Zeller has some merit to be used here. Can he get 25 points, which is all he needs, really? Yeah, definitely. He's averaging 27 across his last 5. So you'd have to think that he's a pretty good chance to do that. On the flip side, DeAndre Jordan at 8,000, he's averaging over 40 in his last 3 games, and you would think that he'd be a pretty good chance to get 40 here. JJ Redick at 5,100, he's been playing solidly. He's more of a cash game play to me. I don't think his tournament upside is all that high, but he's just going to be consistent 25 fantasy points. And Chris Paul at 9,300. He's really playing fantastically at the moment. A 41-point average across his last 5. His minimum score in that time is only 34, so really solid floor. Yes, you're paying 9,300 for him, but I think you're fairly confident of the sort of numbers you're going to get from him. And you could go a bit lower, and you could look at Kemba Walker, who's at 8,800. The problem with Kemba is he's got to face off against Chris Paul, and he's got to have Chris Paul's defense on him. Now, Kemba's numbers look good, a 41.7 average in the last 5, a floor of 33.9, a max of 50. But the Chris Paul factor means that I'd probably be a little bit hesitant about using Kemba Walker in this one. Not many other guys really stand out to me. Frank Kaminsky at 3,900, maybe, but that's very, very hit or miss for a tournament, I think. The Chicago Bulls and the Atlanta Hawks is up next. The Hawks are favored by two, a very big total in this one. It's 208. Joakim Noah is listed as doubtful, so we don't think he's going to play. Bob Portis at 3,900. You have to look at it. He hasn't been that good lately, though, only averaging 16.6 points in the last three games. But the Hawks are not a great defensive front court. He's averaging 21 in his last five, so he's had a bit of a slip. And that's a sub 4,000 price. There's some merit to using Bob Portis. I don't think it's great merit. I don't think that he's a must-play guy. But yeah, cheap price, you can look at him. I like all of the Bulls' big men here, actually. Nikola Mirotic at 4,900. He's been pretty solid lately. 24-point average across his last five. He's had a 40-point game in there as well. Nice matchup for him. And Pau Gasol is dominating at the moment. He's at 9,000. He's averaging almost 50 across his last three games. And again, this is a pretty good matchup for him. Kyle Korver's been terrible. And at 4,000, matching up against Jimmy Butler, I don't think I want to really use him. Derrick Rose at 6,300. He's looked better, but he's just not producing enough fantasy points. He's hit 30 points once in his last five games, and it was just at 34, and that's sort of right on 5x value, so I don't want to use him. I'm a bit hesitant with Jeff Teague, who's only averaging 14 points in his last three. The minutes have been reduced. His salary is now under 6,000, and he does get the Derrick Rose defense, so there's a bump there. So I could understand in a tournament looking at him, but in a cash game, it feels very risky to me. Al Horford at 7,600, Bulls big men, lots of fantasy points. He's been great lately. Only 7,600 you pay out for Al Horford, so I do like him. He's averaging the same points as Paul Millsap is over the last three games, but you pay 800 less. Now, Millsap is not a bad option, but Horford, the center spot for the Bulls, is where the fantasy points really come into play. Jim Butler at 8,600. He's almost got a 50-point average across his last three. That salary's creeping up, but I think it's hard to go wrong with using him. Same with Kent Bazemore at 5,900. He's got a 30-point average in his last three games, which is right on 5x value, and he was really good in the one before that against Philadelphia. Don't think there's many other guys to really... You can look at Dennis Schroeder maybe at 4,700. Maybe in a tournament if T gets reduced again. He might have some upside there. He almost dropped 25 in the last game. The Washington Wizards and the Orlando Magic. The Magic are favored by two. The total is 198. Lord Alfred Payton is questionable with his ankle, and Chris Humphries is questionable with his knee. So Humphries doesn't impact us much, but Lord Alfred does. Victor Oladipo at 6,000 is one of the better plays of the day. He's averaging 35 across the last three, and at 6,000, that's great value, and his value rises even more if Payton is out. Aaron Gordon at 3,700, he's sort of in that Bob Portis mode. Yeah, look, it looks appealing. It's a nice salary. It's a nice matchup, but he really hasn't got it done yet. You think he could maybe have a decent game here, so he's worth looking at in a tournament to fill out a roster. Nick Vucevic at 7,400, really good matchup for him in this one. He put up 42 in the last one. I do like him to give you another sort of high, mid to high 30s number. And Toby Harris at 5,700, he was massive in the last game in terms of what he was able to do, 38 fantasy points. But he just hasn't been giving us that lately. He's only averaging 22 across the last five. The matchup is sort of neutral, so I'm not sure I want to get on board with him. Marcin Gortat at 6,900, probably a little bit expensive, although it's not like Nick Vucevic is a great defender, but the Magic do limit opposition centers a little bit in terms of their fantasy output, so I reckon he can do better than using Gortat. And John Wall at 9,800, it's a nice matchup for him. His production has been down, though. He's under 40-point average in his last five. You need him to go bigger than that, obviously, but this is a matchup that might, and earlier in the season, he destroyed the Magic. This might be a spot to use him. And I also like Otto Porter. He's now at 6,000, so the salary has come up. But he is averaging over 30 across the last five games. It's someone that you can consider using because he's a nice cash game play, I think. No one else really worth considering too much, I don't think. The Brooklyn Nets and the Detroit Pistons are up next. The Pistons are favored by 12. The total is 194.5 in this one. Yeah, look, Shane Larkin at 4,400 still hasn't really given us great value, but he doesn't even need to get to 25 to be a solid return here. I like him for his salary, but overall the matchup doesn't really suit him going up against the Pistons, who are good against opposition point guards, but I would still find a way to try and use him in some of my lineups. Reggie Jackson, on the other hand, at 7,300, this is a great matchup for him. He put up 35 in the last game. He looks like he could be on track for 35-plus in this one. I like using him. And KCP also gets a tasty matchup. He's got a 27.5-point average in his last three games. He's priced at less than 6,000. Nets, shooting guards, it all works out well for him. Marcus Morris at 5,000 has just been bad lately. He's averaging under 18 points in his last five games. Not something I want to really use. Andre Drummond at 8,900. I don't think I really like. He's been a little bit quiet lately. He's had a couple of games where he's been limited in the last two. The matchup looks good, and it looks good on the surface, but I just don't think I would use him. Brook Lopez at 8,700 has been a little bit quiet as well, and this is not a good matchup to go and use him. Thad Young at 7,100, not the best spot for him in this one. The Pistons do restrict opposition power forwards quite a lot, as they do with our shooting guards. So Joe Johnson's not someone I want to throw out there, definitely not in any cash game formats. The Toronto Raptors and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Raptors are favored by 9.5. The total is 202.5 points here. We need to know the status of Terrence Ross, who had that back issue. If he is out, James Johnson becomes more appealing. He's still minimum salary. This is an easy matchup for these guys, the Raptors against the Sixers. He'd be someone I'd look at. If Ross plays and we hear that everything's fine, he's at 3,700. He's worth a look. Again, he gets hot and hits seven threes, and he smashes value. Johnson goes out there and gets five blocks. They smash value. It's hard in a cash game, but in a tournament, both of those guys at that price, we know that this is a nice matchup for them. And if Ross is out especially, Johnson's a guy that to take a look at, as is Corey Joseph, as he's at 3,700. And all of these guys, their recent production hasn't been great, but there's factors influencing why they could be better in this one. Patrick Patterson, I just ranted about how bad he was earlier, but the matchup suits him. He's at 3,600, maybe, but I probably would steer clear. But I do like Jonas Valanciunas at 5,900. Been playing a lot better lately. 26.8 average across his last three, including today's game where he struggled and scored under 20. This is a good spot for him to put up a pretty monster line. Jahlil Okafor at 6,200 has been playing a little bit better lately. His best game was his last game. 30 points in that one. At 6,200, I'll probably steer clear of him. DeMar DeRozan at 8,000. I do like this one here. He put up 49 today against the Wizards. He had been red hot up until a few games before that. This is against the Sixers. I think he is worth spending the 8,000 on. But Jimmy Butler's another high-priced shooting guard you can use as well. Ish Smith is now at 6,100. Not against Kyle Lowry. I don't want to spend that sort of salary on him. And speaking of Lowry, at 9,000... I reckon you can use Lowry at 9,000 against the Sixers. Even in limited minutes, I think he'll put up some pretty big numbers. 6,300 for Nerlens Noel. Feels a bit expensive for me. His numbers have dropped just slightly with Okafor back, not to what they were before, but enough for me to think that it's not a great spot to use him. And Robert Covington at 4,300. I just wanted to mention him because we're not using him in any sort of situation. Miami Heat and Utah Jazz, there is no spread for this one because we don't know if Derek Favors is playing, we don't know if Rod Hood is playing, and they're going to have an impact, obviously. We don't know what sort of minutes Rudy Gobert is going to play. There is no one in this game that I really like the DFS potential of. Hassan Whiteside is too up and down. Hood, is he going to play? Who knows? Goran Dragic, 5,600, maybe I can get behind using him. But with Gobert back, does that restrict point guards like it did earlier in the season? Probably. Gordon Hayward at 7,300. The matchup is okay for him, but his production has been way down. I don't want to use him. I don't want to use any of these guys in this matchup. Chris Bosh, if he was at 7,500, I'd say yes, but he's at 8,000. No. Rudy Gobert at 6,900. Not until he gets back in action. There's just too many unknowns, and two of the slower paced teams in the NBA, all that adds up to being not a spot that we want to really look too much at DFS, I don't think. The last game of the night is a spot where there's going to be DFS value because it's the Warriors and the Kings. The Warriors are favored by 6.5, and the total is a massive 222. We will likely have Omri Caspi back. DeMarcus Cousins sprained his ankle at the end of the last game. He is listed as questionable at the moment. I would assume that he plays, and Willie Cauley-Stein is out. Cousins at 10,500 has been just on fire, averaging almost 60 points in his last three games. I reckon you have to use him. Well, no, you don't have to use him. I think he's a really good option to use in this one. Rajon Rondo at 8,300. Don't love it going against the Warriors, to be honest. Darren Collison at 5,300. He's been poor of late. Don't love it here against the Warriors either. I like Omri Caspi back at 5,700. I think his ownership will be relatively low. At 5,700, if he gives you 30 points, which is what he was averaging before he went out, I think that that's a pretty realistic target for him. And Klay Thompson at 7,800 has been playing sensationally well. We know what he did against the Kings last year, dropping 37 in a quarter. His scoring has been great. It's an easy matchup. He's a guy that we can get behind using. Steph Curry at 10,500, still not playing enough minutes for me to justify that salary. And 9,700 for Draymond Green, that's too high for me. I don't think I want to go and use him. He had a triple-double today, just put up 41 points, and it's not really returning value, although the matchup is pretty tasty, and I could look pretty stupid by the end of the day by saying I don't think I want to use Draymond Green. Rudy Gay is at 7,200. He's just a really solid guy that is going to give you 35 points, maybe. But against the Warriors, yeah, they're not terrible. They're not hard to play against on the wing, guys. So Gay's maybe a guy you can use from the Kings. All right, let's bring up the DFS plays of the day. Shane Larkin at 4,400 as a point guard, Reggie Jackson at 73, and Chris Paul at 9,300 at shooting guard. Terrence Ross at 37 if he plays, Victor Oladipo 6,000, and DeMar DeRozan at 8,000. Could also have had Jimmy Butler in there also. Small forwards, Nikola Mirotic at 49, Omri Caspi at 57, and there is no high-priced power small forwards that I like. Bobby Portis, 39. For the power forwards, Taj Gibson, 53 for the power forwards, Pau Gasol, 9,000 for the power forwards. You can see that I like a lot of those Bulls there. Probably wouldn't recommend playing them all together, or you couldn't anyway, but depending on the way you structure your team, all of those guys have value at their salary. Don't really love any of the cheap centers on this slate. If Cousins is out, Kosta Kufos slides in there. Jonas Valanciunas at 59 is a mid-priced guy, and then Boogie at 10,500 rounds things out. We are done today, guys. Again, apologies for the audio issues on the last podcast. Apologies for the rant in this one about Anthony Davis. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. Basketball Monsters Twitter account, which you need to keep up to date with everything that's happening during the games, before the games, is BaskMonster. So follow that. Myself and Kyle and Ken run that account. There's lots of info coming through there, all the up-to-date status news. Check out basketballmonster.com, where there's articles going up, all the tools, all the forums, all that stuff over on Basketball Monster, and of course, Hardwood Paroxysm. And hopefully, if you are subscribed to the Hardwood Paroxysm feed, you're back listening to me again after a week or so of it not being on there. It should be, I'm told, back in business. So I do welcome you guys back and hope you missed me. We are done today, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.